on all the way to their shoulder blades.
Oh, wow.
I got 93 sunflower seeds out of this one chipmunk. 93.
Okay, so like, you're rooting around in a dead chipmunk's the pouch and then counting the seeds.
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
That's what science is.
Yeah.
You know, you can't know unless you count them. I mean, I could just look at them and go, he's got a lot of seeds in there, one, wow. two, and a heap. But truthfully, yeah, you got to get in there and dig in and count them. Yeah.
Talk about a podcast for the curious. There we go. But John Latimer did it for us, so we don't have to. That's what I'm going to... That's where I'm going to go with. I don't need to do that.
Oh, come on. I want to send me your count.
No.
I'm talking about those that die accidentally. And this time of year, really, chipmunks are becoming more rare. They are definitely getting into the ground to enjoy that larder that they put away all summer. And so it's going to be harder and harder for your dog to catch one. But should that unfortunate event take place, don't let the science get away from you. It's a good opportunity to find out things. You are listening to 91.7 KAXC, and if that's not obvious, this is Tuesday morning, and it's the morning where they sort of allow me to come on the air, and I'm not sure how long they will continue, but in the meantime, we are 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
Kutaska Community Action offers free lunch every Wednesday from 11 to 1 at their Circles of Support office. It's located across from Treasure Bay Printing on Northeast 4th Street in Grand Rapids. They also offer a food pantry 11 to 2 Monday through Thursday. And the Northwoods Friends of the Arts in Cook features Native American art during the month of November. There's an opening reception this Friday from 5 to 7. The gallery's open Thursdays and Fridays, 10 to 4. Saturdays, 9 to 1. Also going on for First Friday in Grand Rapids, McCroskey Art Center has receptions for two exhibits. That's from 4 to 7 o'clock this Friday. The Ginnewin Gallery presents Generations, a group exhibit featuring Indigenous artists, and the Minnesota Gallery features For the Love of Trees. It's by Duluth artist Sue Rauschenfels. Find a full list of First Friday Art Walk locations at grandrapidsarts.org.
My hometown's a few short years from burning down to the ground. So I drive up for an ice cream cone from the soft serve joint before it's all gone. So thick and the news is so bleak and the richest in the history of man keep talking about space like it's the promised land while records break and waters rise and we're hunted by the hands of time cause wildfire season's here again each year it's harder to pretend that got my life ahead of me. In a few years I'll be 29 and I am feeling terrified. And I'm not immune to positivity, but it's dangerously close to complacency. And
Joby Riccio, the song called Wildfire Season. We'll be talking about wildfires and fire safety, fire prevention around our homes. That's coming up at 8:40, reducing wildfire risk for landowners. And another segment produced by Mark Jacobs of Aiken County. We're meeting Gloria Erickson. She's the Fire Adapted Communities Project Coordinator from Dovetail Partners. Stay tuned for that conversation.
We receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
Pine River Market Square has their last market of the year this Saturday from 10 to 2. It's indoors at the warehouse located on Norway Avenue. You can find local produce, baked goods, crafts, and more. And in Brainerd, the Crossing Arts Alliance is hosting Sweet Life Poetry Reading this Saturday, 1 to 3 at Central Lakes College Library in Brainerd. It'll be the winners from Lake Country Journal's Poetry Contest reading their poems along with several other entrants. Light refreshments will be served. All right. Lots of things going on in our region. We'd love to hear from you. You can email events. You can email psa@kaxe.org or text us 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you this morning. You getting used to daylight saving? How's it going for you? All kinds of things. Have you counted the seeds?
I did. It didn't even seem to me. It did not even seem like it was just something that I had to do.
You didn't kill it to do that. Your dog had already.
It died. Yeah. And I was curious about how many seeds can a chipmunk hold.
Sure.
If a chipmunk could hold seeds.
Yeah. There we go.
Paraphrase an old saying. Well, it was like the time that I described the northern holly berries is tasting like earwax, and people wondered how I would know what earwax tasted like. And I was like, good God, weren't you ever a child?
Yeah.
Didn't you ever stick your finger in there and then put it in your mouth?
Mm. We're not recommending either of these things.
Do not do as I do. Do as Heidi tells you to.
No.
Because, I am alive only because of good fortune and bad luck on the part of my enemies.
Our question of the week, we want to hear from you. It's Minnesota's firearm deer season opener this Saturday. If you have hunting traditions or stories or recipes to share, text 218-326-1234.
Support comes from Happy Dancing Turtle, a nonprofit organization dedicated to growing stewards through education, programs, and experiences. More information at happydancingturtle.org. Education and experiences. See? It's right there.
It was quite an experience.
Yeah. When I look at what science and what reasonable people talk about nowadays, I think to myself, it's a miracle that I am even alive today, because I have been exposed to, I'm sure, every kind of bad thing there is out there, and probably brought it on myself, you know, put it in my own mouth, but I don't recommend it. I just say that up to this point, I've been lucky.
If you got a weather question, text us 218-326-1234. Local music now, McKeon, Hugh Roberts.
Christmas Eve, to hear you wanted me to leave. Forecast called for ice and snow, my fever rose. I hit the road on the radio. No music played, the sloshing sounds of hydroplanes between the lines. Forget the pain, the wiper blades, the freezing rain. Fever dreams, I FaceTime my mom for gift exchange. You took a week to isolate, for you to call and ask, take a break, and a year would end in healing. Me in the trees, you in the city, you got your things. Well, I was away, I came home to that on New Year's Day. What do
That is local artist McKeon Hugh Roberts. Is It Me is the name of the song. I think you went on a Christmas bird count with him.
I have been on a number of excursions with McKeon and have enjoyed every one. A good man in the woods. Definitely the kind of guy you want to hang up with if you get a chance. Plus, he can sing and play music, which is leagues ahead of me.
It is time to talk weather. It's big weather picture time with Tornado Bob. Bob Kinzemius joins us Tuesday mornings. Morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Good to see you. I'm a little dismayed at the strong winds that came along and sort of ripped the leaves off of my remaining aspens.
You're dismayed?
But, yeah.
Why?
You know, well, I wanted to see how long they would stay on the tree, you know, and just kind of unencumbered by that strong wind. But I don't control the wind, because if I did, I'd have a lot more exhaling experiences.
Okay. But you find that, I find that a lot of the leaves just, if it gets cold enough, they just drop off.
That's the case.
Down.
Yep. Yeah, with it, and we had, when was it, the 29th or the 26th?
Huh. So they just, we had one cold day. Very beginning of last week, I think it was.
Right. Monday or Tuesday, it was down to 21 at my house, which definitely affected some of the leaves.
Yeah. Yeah, but they just, and it's a sunny day and the sun first hits them, then the temperatures get above freezing and the leaves just drop.
Yeah.
We talked about that last week.
Yes, we did.
So
I've got a question now. As I look out the window here, I see that there's a patch of blue sky over your house.
Yeah.
Is that?
Thank you. I have a sunny disposition, so sunny a disposition that my house, attracts blue skies.
You know?
As a meteorologist, it's actually not that great, because you like to have the most rainfall and snowfall at your house. But, yeah, maybe the tornadoes too, but I have never been hit by a tornado. I mean, my house has never been hit by a tornado.
Yeah. Well, you've been closer to tornadoes than I have. And willingly. Yeah.
I've been closer to tornadoes than my house has.
Yeah. Good for, lucky for both of me and your house.
Yeah.
Because your house can't move and I wouldn't know what to do except
that, you would figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm sure you would figure it out.
Which way is the wind blowing and which way am I going? Yeah, I would definitely be on the move.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
are we done with tornado season?
Not necessarily. Our latest, up until 2021, our latest tornadoes in Minnesota were like November 17th, but we broke that last, 4 years ago when there were some December tornadoes.
Wow.
In southern Minnesota. So
now the physical weather requirements for a tornado are temperature in.
Yeah, you have to have warm air near the ground. And you also have a significant amount of wind shear, warmth and moisture near the ground. And we had an event in December of 2021 where the it got warm and we got temperatures into the and dew points somewhere near 50 with a right amount of wind shear. It's kind of tough to get those conditions up this far north because the ground is cooling off and usually a lot of cases. The temperature profile might be pretty close to something that could produce a tornado, but the ground's a little too cold and it cools the air near the surface and it's just a little bit too stable for them. But in this case, in 2021, in December, it was warm enough.
Southwestern Minnesota, I'm assuming?
Southeast.
Southeast?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And up here, we had rainfall associated with this same system, but we didn't have any tornadoes. It was cooler up here.
Uh-huh.
But our official like bounds of the tornado season have shifted a little bit later. And then the beginning in 2017, I think March 6th established the early date.
Okay.
So someday that'll happen. You know, we'll push it into February, but not yet.
Wow.
Yeah. Whew. In Minnesota, southern Minnesota.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, so yeah, that would be like every month but January having had once we push it into February, which I don't know when that'll happen, but it'll eventually, I think it'll happen.
It's starting to sound like deer ticks.
Yeah.
every month but January so far, actually. I think February and December are also in that group, but only just, you know, their late November sightings and early February sightings of deer ticks. So,
yeah.
Deer ticks and tornadoes. Hey.
They're both becoming more year-round.
It's what makes Minnesota great.
Yeah. So, in the short term, fall is, well, as we go through our kind of later part of meteorological fall now.
Mm-hmm.
September and October are past. I did somehow manage to get almost 0.3 inch of rain last week, and that brought my total up closer to an inch, I think just shy of an inch of rain for the month of October. So still below average.
Yep.
By a reasonable amount, but not as dry as I thought. I thought we were done with precipitation, but somehow I had a period of time where a 12-hour period where it rained hard enough to actually accumulate. So
yeah, I think I had total 0.6 of an inch during that. It was 3 days, 0.4, 0.04, 0.01, and 0.01, and it was just, oh wait, I had, at one day I had 0.1.
Okay,
so yeah, it was
not heavy,
and I'm still under an inch.
Okay, yeah.
But real close.
And you won't have a chance to exceed an inch in October because October's now, it ended, so.
In the rearview mirror, yeah.
Yep.
Now, what is the average rainfall for the month of October?
It's closer to 2 inches.
Just two?
Yeah, a little over
I
two,
would
maybe.
I would have guessed closer to three, but nope.
No, a little over two. I should take a look at what the latest is.
Yeah, and how about the month coming at us, November?
Then it drops quite a bit. It's just it's less than 2 inches.
Okay,
more than an inch. I can look that up as we're talking here.
Yeah,
but
October is always the month when, or not October, November is always the month where I'll get snow with accumulation. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to stay, which usually occurs in early December, but I will get snow and it will cover the ground sometime during November.
Okay.
You're agreeable with that?
That seems to make sense.
You're not going
to
reach across the table and hit me with the stapler or anything?
No, okay, no, cool. I won't do that. But
okay.
This year wouldn't surprise me if it didn't happen, but we'll see. I don't have a very, the pattern just does not look snowy for us.
Oh, really?
No.
Hmm.
Okay, so daily, monthly normals, I'm looking up.
Yeah.
Let's see here. All right, here we go. So for November, October average is, 2.79 inches rainfall in October. So we had under an inch. So that's like, you know, maybe a third of what our normal October rainfall is.
Right.
November is, it drops fast. It's down to 1.59 in November.
Ooh.
It's the month where it really dries out the most.
That's kind of funny because November is one of our cloudier months.
Yeah, that's what I think of it here, though. It's like it's cloudy. It's like as cloudy as possible without raining. Yeah, it's just like the maximum. And then December gets cloudier and even a little bit drier. December averages is December is 1.23 inches. And then it keeps drying out. My browser won't go over to the other side. Okay, so January then is just under an inch. 0.97, and February ends up being driest at 0.85.
Really? Less than an inch for February on average?
Yeah, it seems like a number of winters have exceeded that. And, you know, sometimes it seems to get a little snowier in February than in January, but the long-term averages show February not being, it's being kind of dry.
Yeah. Well, and typically the snow that I catch and measure, you talk about a 10-to-1 ratio, like an inch of snow would be a tenth of an inch of rain. It's even less than that, in my observations, where I'll get an inch of snow and it'll melt out to like, you know, 0.05 or something. Just is much drier snow in February or in those cold winter months. So. But you're telling me now that that November looks like not going to be particularly cold and snowy, or certainly not snowy. I mean, we've established there's not a lot of precip in the four winter months that we're looking at. November, December, January,
even
February.
If it came all snow in November, it's not a huge amount. But it just seems like anecdotally. November's, you know, there were some November's back, I don't know, 70s, 80s, 90s, where it did end up being kind of snowy. You know, we could occasionally get a pretty heavy snowfall November. And lately, it just doesn't seem to happen. I mean, we did get, 2016 was a remarkable event. We had like about 18 inches or so on November 18th. So that was like very warm that early in that November, and then it turned cold and just dumped snow one day, and then it kind of get back. That ended up melting because the ground was so warm when it fell. And then we had a few days of not so remarkable warm weather. But when that snow was being melted on both sides, it went pretty fast.
You know, I remember that. I remember that we had, I don't what, 7-8 inches of snow. There was a fair amount of snow on the ground. And I had written in my notes, this is snow cover for the winter is here. And then 1st of December rolled around and we were looking at bare ground again.
Yeah, and interestingly, also the that famous Halloween snowstorm that if you were, you know, I guess if you're Gen Z or Gen Alpha, you just get sick of people talking about it because, but that one also melted. It was like, okay, yeah, here we are, 2 feet of snow in the Twin Cities and we got sub-zero weather. We're like, yeah, this stuff's going to stay, but nope, it melted.
Yeah. So, yeah. Crazy.
Anyway, so we don't have any snow in the any accumulating snow in the forecast. There's just it looks like we could have some flurries once in a while. We have a system that's going across northern Minnesota today. So if you're along north of Highway 2, mostly north of Highway 2, you can get a tenth to maybe as much as 0.4 inches. If you're right in the thick of things, I think if you're somewhere like in southern Coochin County, if you happen to be in the bog and you happen to have a rain gauge with you, record it, because it's going to be the maximum amount for this.
Stab that system. Thing in the ground and catch it.
And that system rolls off. We get another brief kind of wave of precipitation on Thursday. Not at least sometime on Thursday, but it'll be very, very quick. It might be have a flake or two mixed with it. And then it gets kind of colder this weekend, and there could be some flurries. And temperatures lows will get kind of into the lower 20s and upper teens.
Okay.
On Sunday morning.
All right.
Before it warms up again next week, and we'll be having weather with highs in the 50s again.
All right. So the deer hunters will have a couple of cooler days to open the season, but once that's passed, it'll get warm again. So if you're if you shoot that deer, hanging it in your garage might not be enough to keep it cool. You may want to butcher it right away.
Yeah, probably. If you can, this weekend you could just leave it out, leave it in your garage.
And they will.
But yeah, if you shoot one next week, it's going to be warmer.
All right. Well, that's good advice.
We've been talking about a full moon hike that's tonight. Do you think people will be able to see it? It would be too cloudy.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, just
tomorrow's supposed to be clear.
But it'll still be bright enough, you know? Okay. It'll be, right. Yeah.
I noticed that this morning. Last night it was just absolutely stunning outside, really bright.
Yeah.
But then clouds kind of moved in around 10, 9:30. And by the time I woke up at 5, it was cloudy, but it was still light. I mean, there was still plenty of...
Yeah.
I didn't have any trouble navigating around the yard.
Sometimes I've been on full moon skis. And those are fun.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until one of those unseen hazel brush branches whips you across your face, and you think,
or wolves have happened to leave something in the middle of the track that causes
really?
You to stop.
What's the story here? What happened?
I was skiing with some friends, and like all of a sudden, like we're up in the Joyce Estates, and they have like parallel tracks, so we're just like skiing next to each other, talking, and all of a sudden he just does a total face plant. Like, what the heck was that?
What are you doing?
Are you better, like, that bad of a skier all of a sudden? Like, and we look, and there's a smearing of wolf poop. They like to leave it right in the ski.
Tracks. They love the trails.
They go right there.
Oh, yeah.
So this is unseen, fairly fresh scat in the middle of the tracks. And
if you get the feeling there might be like half a dozen wolves just laying out there in the snow across in the woods, just watch this.
Yeah,
I have not had that happen, but I have been whipped by hazel brush.
Oh yeah, you don't
and
see
it's
that stuff.
It's
yeah.
Like when your face is like 20 degrees or lower and you get hit by a piece of hazel, you're just like, ooh,
yeah,
makes your eyes water.
That's why when we go skiing in the daytime, we make sure to clear that stuff off.
Yeah, good idea.
So you can see it. No accumulating snow for the foreseeable future. We are in November. It can happen anytime now. But
true.
Yep.
When will I see ice on my lakes? When will I get my ice boat out?
That's a good question. If it's not this weekend, you know, like a thin veneer of like ice along the shore, maybe this weekend.
I need a little bit more. Yeah. I'm a thin ice guy, but I got to have more than a skim ice around the edge. I do know that.
Yeah, it's going to be a while. It won't be before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's been the case.
Yeah.
So it used to be earlier. Now my average is the 17th, but that reflects a lot of years back in the 80s and 90s when I was, you know, skating on the 8th and 10th of November.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Not this year.
Okay. I won't bother looking for my skates, although I happen to know where they are.
Well, one interesting thing about the, like we're talking about, you know, the flip of the pattern coming up. I'm looking at these weekly forecasts. You can look at some longer range forecasts from the modeling systems that Europe uses and the U.S. uses. Europe is indicating a change sometime around week three, so maybe around like November 20th or something, November, you know, right before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
The American model says it'll just stay warm. So look for maybe, you know, it's not uncommon to have a transition in the pattern, you know, sometime in late November. So we'll see how that goes. And there were a couple of the factors I've seen. If somebody passed me an article yesterday or the day before, saying, well, there's more Siberian snow cover this year. There's a lot of, you know, Siberian snow cover at the end of October tends to favor Minnesota winters being colder and snowier later in the season. So if you get early season, there's a theory that the early season, it might start out kind of mild, but if you get this early season of snow accumulation and depth in Siberia, that tends to transfer to some other, have an impact on the longer term weather patterns that gives us a little colder and snowier conditions in Minnesota.
An interesting theory.
We'll see. And I don't know. Another thing that's kind of interesting up there, like thinking about how the transition to fall and winter happens, is that the sea ice, I mean, that was like back in 2012, we had this set this record minimum. And then at that point, the trend was looking so sharply downward in sea ice that I thought by now we'd have ice-free summers in the Arctic. It was like looking like it was happening really fast. But strangely, since then, we have not broken, gone below 2012 in terms of summer sea ice.
Wow.
At the minimum. So
okay.
This year, we were a fair bit above the 2012 level. But there's a lot less ice. There's less ice than there was in the summer. It just seems to have reached a stable state of like low summer sea ice, but not disappearing yet.
All right.
Anyway, so that's where it is. Sea ice is obviously increasing rapidly now, but there's still some open spots out in the Arctic because it takes a while for that large of a body of water to freeze up.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true for Hudson Bay. You know, needs to freeze up first.
Your word for it.
Quick question that came in via text, maybe for both of you, from Craig. Mental health question for you. How long is it appropriate to grieve after the dock is pulled? 3 days? A week? Is a month too long?
You have to grieve until the ice is present, and then you can walk out there without a dock.
Oh, then you don't need a dock.
Then you don't need a dock.
There we go.
So
I like
that.
You have time. You don't.
I like that.
You don't.
You have time
to
grieve. You don't have to be over it really fast.
Just let it fester. Let it enjoy it. Bathe in it.
Want to say thank you, folks. Continue to support KEXC. That includes Scott from Eden Prairie, who just pledged support. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thanks as always, Bob.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Coming up, we've got local news, and then we are talking wildfires.
For KAXC News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Hibbing police arrested a man Sunday on suspicion of intentional second-degree murder. Officers responded early Sunday to reports of gunfire in the Meadowview Apartments parking lot. They found a man with gunshot wounds to his chest, later identified as 24-year-old Parker Charles Johnson of Hibbing. Responders rendered aid, but Johnson was pronounced dead at the scene. Midday Sunday, Hibbing PD arrested a man without incident and say he is cooperating with the investigation. 30-year-old Daniel James Dale was in custody at the St. Louis County Jail and has not yet been formally charged as of Monday afternoon. State House Speaker Lisa Demuth will run for governor. The 58-year-old joins a growing field of Republicans vying to take on Governor Tim Walz next year. Demuth was first elected to the House in 2018 after serving on her local school board in Cold Spring for over a decade. The Minnesota Reformer reports that Demuth says her solid conservative values cross party lines, and as the highest-ranking Republican in the state, her record as a leader makes her the best candidate for governor. In her initial campaign message, Damuth says she has, quote, had enough of Tim Walz dividing Minnesotans to cover up his failures.
Let's be real. Tim Walz doesn't just disagree with us. He hates us. He's more focused on attacking President Trump than on fixing Minnesota.
Also vying for the Republican nomination are 2022 nominee Scott Jensen, State Representative Kristen Robbins, and Army veteran and healthcare executive Kendall Qualls. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension says breathalyzer results previously called into question are accurate. The BCA temporarily ordered law enforcement to stop using DataMaster breathalyzer tests last month after the discovery of data entry errors related to the dry gas cylinders used in the machines. But the agency says its lab scientists mathematically verified that the data entry errors did not impact the accuracy of the tests. Hundreds of tests were compromised because of the error, potentially impacting drunk driving cases. At least one case was dismissed in Aiken County. Superintendent Drew Evans said at a Friday press conference that results will have to be examined on a case-by-case basis, but there shouldn't be any impact.
These amended results will be provided to law enforcement that will provide them to the prosecutors, and they'll make a determination what the next steps might be legally.
From now on, only BCA personnel will replace dry gas cylinders. Half of all DataMaster instruments were verified and secured as of Friday, with full completion expected in the next few weeks. Two Northland athletes took home hardware from the state cross-country meet Saturday. Staples Motley senior and defending champ Audrey Brownell shaved 2.6 seconds from last year's race time, but it wasn't enough to defend her title. Brownell finished second. Detroit Lakes sophomore Connor Maleka took seventh. 12 teams and 37 individual student athletes from northern Minnesota competed at the meet. Six more finished in the top 20, and the Greenway-Nashwaukee-Wauten boys had the best team placement at seventh. Two more state tournaments kick off this week. Five Northland teams will compete at the state volleyball tournament, which runs Wednesday through Saturday. Grand Rapids will play in Class 3A, Esko in 2A, and Nevis, Northwoods, and Ataborup West in 1A. All five teams are seeded in the bottom three and face some of the top teams in the state in the quarterfinals. While the courts will be clear by Sunday, there will still be a lot of football to be played. At least two Northland teams will advance to the semifinals set for next week. That's because half of the nine-player bracket is made up of northern Minnesota teams. Kitson County Central will play Cook County Thursday in Grand Rapids, and Cromwell Wright area will play the defending champs Fertile Beltrami Thursday in Moorhead. Also Thursday in 2A, Moose Lake Willow River will play in its 18th state tourney since 2006, and in 3A, Grand Rapids will face Benilde St. Margaret's, the same school Thunderhawks volleyball will play. Manomanwaubin and Barnum represent the Northland Friday in single A. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
You can sign up for a podcast of the Up North Report as well as our brand new podcast, the Season Watch Pod. Look at KAXE.org for more information. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. This is People Powered KAXE.
Support for KAXE comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
Cloudy today, chance of rain this afternoon with highs in the low to mid 50s.
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, Malachi Coons is our host for Headwaters. He is welcoming Kelly Smith from the Brainerd Lakes area. She's the new director, artistic director of the Grassroots Concert Series. Make sure you stay tuned for Headwaters at 9.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industry since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward. And we receive support from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities, working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org.
Coming up next, we continue our series on wildfires, thanks to our producer, Mark Jacobs of Aiken County. Wildfire risk isn't something only Western states are dealing with. Like many places, northern Minnesota has been experiencing drier and hotter summers and changing forest conditions. We welcome to the conversation today from Dovetail Partners, Inc., Gloria Erickson. She is the Fire Adapted Communities Project Coordinator. And Mark and Gloria join us this morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Well, Gloria, let's just start. What does it mean, your role, to be a Fire Adapted Communities Project Coordinator?
Yeah, that's quite a mouthful, isn't it? Simply put, I help landowners and communities live with fire. I supply information, resources, and demonstrate actionable items that people can do to help to prepare before, during, and after a wildfire.
Gloria, can you list some of those actions that I might take as a landowner? I'm 10 miles out of town.
You're cutting to the chase.
I want to know because I live a ways from the fire department.
We're going to get Gloria's top 10 here.
Good.
Okay. You've cut to the chase, but I'm going to do a little bit before.
All right, okay? Please. Yeah, I don't mean to speed you up.
If you don't mind.
Not at all.
First of all, I just want to say that fire is not inherently a bad thing, right? I mean, we cook with it. We heat with it. We love our campfires. And in our boreal forests up here, we need fire for regeneration. And I think we've heard already from a lot of Mark's guests that human beings, indigenous people from all over the world, have used fire to shape and care for their landscapes. And it's been for hunting, it's been for food, medicinal purposes, and spiritual. And so I just wanna emphasize that fire is not necessarily a bad thing. But when we fear fire is when it's going to hurt people, when it's going to hurt our communities, threaten our economies up here. And as we move into our forested areas, make that choice that we are going to see it more and more, and we're going to really need to take an active role in helping to basically protect those structures and those people. So when we talk about fire adapted, it really is about choice. Is about choice for us moving up here. It's about recognizing that there is a risk that when we live in a forested area, it burns. But also part of it is taking responsibility, that we have a responsibility not only to the health of our forests, but to help our communities be more resilient to the risk of wildfire. And so all of us have a role. And so when we talk about fire adapted, it's actually a pretty big umbrella. And we're only going to talk about one thing. We're going to get to that chase. We're going to talk about the
Well, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into this. I mean, in the days of the indigenous folks, you didn't have communication. So you just, if you started a fire and you burned out the neighbors, well, then, you know, too bad to be them, I guess. But nowadays, there's sort of this network of communication. And if you start a fire, pretty much everybody downstream of you or in the line of that fire is going to find out about it and have to do something to protect themselves. I see that in the old days, fire could have been a useful tool. Nowadays, with the woods full of people like me, it's a little bit scary.
I understand the fear, but there is ways and things that you can do. And fire, again, is really important to our forests here, using it in a controlled manner. But getting back to what are some of the tips. So FireWise best practices, that's kind of the term we use to help our structures and around our homes. And that's the key things that we're going to talk about today. But one thing that you need to understand is what actually feeds a fire, what feeds a wildfire. It's going to be weather, wind, drought. It's going to be topography. Are you in a hilly area? Are you in a valley? That kind of thing. And then the third is actually fuels. That's what we're talking about. Our overcrowded forests out there, our dead balsam. So what out of those three things can we control? We can't control the weather, but we can be aware of what the weather is doing and know that it, if it's dry, if it's windy, we're not going to start a campfire out there, okay? Topography, we can't change that. But one thing we can change is the fuels on the ground. And that's, again, back to our role. What can we do? 90% of the wildfires caused in Minnesota are human caused. Now, some people might say, oh, gosh, that's horrible. I say that's opportunity. That means that there is a lot of things that we can do to help our situation, our wildfire situation here. So I am getting to those top 10s, okay? But I wanted you to understand a little bit of the background. So when we talk about wildfire, it's not necessarily the wall of wildfire coming in that's going to take out your structures. There's three different ways that your structures can basically ignite. The first one is embers. This was a total aha moment for me when I was learning about how do I protect my property and my people. In a wildfire situation, we have embers coming off of that fire. One of my wildland firefighters said, Gloria, think about blizzard conditions. Now, instead of snow, it's firebrands coming off of that fire that can travel up to 3 miles. And all those embers are looking for is a super, super dry spot to just land in, smolder around, and start a fire. So when we talk about FireWise best practices, a lot of the things I'm going to say is to avoid those situations, those areas where those embers can land. Another way that's another thing that burns down our structures are what we call surface fires. This is fire that crawls along the ground. Now it can be really a controlled fire, slowly moving. Prescribed burn is like a surface fire. But also in a windy situation, it can travel very fast on the surface. So what we want to do is create what we call fuel breaks to stop the fire from getting close to our structures. The third type of fire is what we call a crown fire. This is the key thing that we don't ever want to see. So a crown fire is when heavy fuels on the ground ignite and actually create a ladder up to the crowns of the trees. And once that fire is in the crown, all bets are off. We're going to pull back all our firefighters. It's only going to be an aerial attack. And so what we want to do, again, when we talk about FireWise best practices, is to get rid of those ladder fuels so we don't see a crown fire. So I'm getting to it now, the top 10. So four things we want to look at. We want to look at signage. We want to look at access into your property. We want to look at the site itself, and we want to look at the structure materials. Now, again, remember I said number one priority is keeping people safe, and that means your firefighters, the people who are on the front lines. So the biggest thing why we're doing this is to keep them safe. And I just want to absolutely emphasize that. Most of our fire departments up here are volunteer. That means they don't get paid for what they're doing. They do it because they love their communities. And so we need to make sure that we can do everything in our power to help them fight a wildfire. So signage is key. Can they see your address? You want a reflective address on both sides, perpendicular to your road, 4 feet off the ground. So in a smoky, chaotic situation that they can still find you. And that means an ambulance as well. The access into your property, very, very important. You want to make sure that your driveway is at least 14 feet wide, 14 feet high, because those structure rigs are big and they're over $500,000. And you don't want anything to happen to it. You also want to make sure that your surface is good. And that means it can be a class 5, but firm, because you know our shoulder seasons, mud. We don't want to get one of those rigs stuck in the middle of a driveway. Also, you want to make sure that they can turn around if they get down to your property. That means you have to have a minimum of 150 feet of turnaround space, because again, a crew leader is not going to send their rig down if they don't think they can get out. And in a wildfire situation, there might be an opportunity where they could, you know, have someone run down there, check it out. Can we turn around? But in a lot of situations, they don't have that time. And if they can't see that their people can get out, they are going to go to the next house that they can save. So access, super big. Now let's talk about the site itself. Around your structures, I'm going to talk about around your structures. 0 to 5 feet around every structure. That means your barn, that means your outhouse, that means your house. You want to make sure that there is nothing flammable, nothing. That means no propane tanks, that means no wood piles. If you have grass, it's short, it's wet. If you have plantings like bushes or whatever, nothing, please, nothing with pine needles, a lot of resin, very flammable. If you do have, you know, hostas or flowers or something like that, again, wet, wet, wet. And we want to make sure that you don't use wood chips around your house. Again, think of those showers of embers coming down, looking for those nice dry spots to land. You do not want them to land in your wood chips. So we suggest using rock, stone, something like that. So that's that 0 to 5. If you have larger trees and the branches are kind of overhanging, you want to make sure that they're cut back at least 10 feet from your roofs and from your siding. The next space, and we call this defensible space or the hazard zone. The next space that we're looking at is between 5 and 30 feet. And just for yucks, when you go home, get out your tape measure, put it out there. Take a look at what 30 feet looks like. It's not very much, but it makes a huge difference. And that 30 feet, do not have any balsam. I don't hate balsam. I'm just going to say that right up front. I don't hate balsam. But the 6-inch
diameter. She hates balsam.
We're getting that, yeah. I don't hate them, but I don't want them.
The 6-inch diameter or less balsam are extremely flammable, dead or alive. Okay? So we do not want to see them close to our structures within that 30-foot zone. If you do have mature white pines, red pines, or whatever, you want to make sure they're trimmed up at least 10 feet off the ground, and that's at the furthest branch. Because again, when I talked about ladder fuels, that's what we want to do. We want to eliminate all the ladder fuels under those trees so we don't have a crown fire. We want to get rid of all the pine needles around. And again, let's not have any dead, dying, anything around in that area. When I talked about fuel breaks, this might be a good place to have paths that are more like stone. Or concrete or something like that, because again, it can create a fuel break. If the fire is a surface fire running along, it can stop dead when it hits something like a concrete path or something like that. Again, the next zone is 30 to 100 feet. And again, get that tape measure out. 100 feet is not a ton of space, but it does make a huge difference. You want to make sure that, again, that all dead and dying, everything is out of there. No pine needles. Again, get rid of those balsam, those 6-inch diameter or less balsam. And if there are, if you have your woodsheds, should be at least 30 feet away from your home. Okay. Because again, embers, dry, looking for those dry spots. So that's why we say 30 feet away from your home. Those big propane tanks, ideally 30 feet away from your home. They're big bombs. You want to make sure that it is all vegetation is cleared from around it, but also above it. Because in a wildfire situation, the air is super hot. And what it does, it's going to boil the propane that's in your tank. Another thing to think about is a full tank is a safe tank, because if it's partially filled, it's going to boil, it's going to create a gas, and then it's going to shoot out in that relief valve. Now, that relief valve, when it shoots out, it's not just gas. It can be a flame going straight up. So that's why it's really important when you're looking at your propane tank that you don't have any overhanging branches, because if it has that flame going up, releasing, it'll catch it on fire and start a crown fire. So as far as, again, your bigger trees in that 30 to 100 foot zone. Now, again, I just want to say I'm never going to tell anybody to cut down their red and white pines, okay? But again, spacing in between the crowns is important. So in this space, we really like to see in the 30 to 60 foot zone at least 12 feet in between the crowns. And the 60 to 100 feet, about 6 feet in between the crowns. It's just helpful. And one thing I do want to say about FireWise best practices, this is not a shaming exercise. This is about choice, okay? So again, these are just suggestions. Now, do I have time? I hope to get to structures. Structures, really important. Okay, number one, priority, get rid of those pine needles. If your pine needles are on the roof or in the or in your gutters, this is your number one place where embers fall, they smolder around, and they can ignite your buildings. So definitely pine needles, get rid of them off the roof, off the gutters, off from around that defensible zone. The next thing is, I usually start from the top, chimneys. You want to make sure that you have spark arresters on your chimneys. That means that sauna as well. Because if a spark comes out of there and lands in those pine needles that you have failed to take off your roof, it will start your place on fire, okay? Roofs. We love metal roofs. They're great. They're very, you know, very fire resistant. But not all of us can afford them, okay? So if you have an asphalt shingle roof, if it's older than 20 years, please consider getting rid of it and changing it out. Those older asphalt shingles are extremely flammable. One of my firefighters said, hey, when I was a kid, I used to start fires with those shingles. So again, older than 20 years, get rid of it. But we do have some good asphalt shingles that are, you know, more fire resistant. The only thing about them is, again, they catch those pine needles. So you gotta be more vigilant about that. Siding of your house, again, the brick, the stone, fiber cement, excellent. But we live in the woods, right? We like wood. So most of our houses are made of wood. So if you have wood siding, you want to make sure that it's in really good shape, meaning like if you have clapboard siding, you want to make sure it's really tight, that embers cannot be sucked in behind the siding. You want to make sure it has a good finish on it, either paint or stain. Log buildings, excellent. They're not going to ignite. I mean, think about it. You have a big log and you put a match to it. Is it going to light up? No. But you want to make sure that it is caulked really well in between, because in a wildfire situation, what's going to happen is